As always, thanks for listening to our Moments That Matter podcast. Today, I want to help get you in the Christmas spirit. And to do that, I'm going to share with you an original Christmas story. Before I get to that, though, let me mention again that, as always, we are recording these podcasts here on the campus of Belmont University. We are using the Malloy Studios, part of the Mike Kerb College of Music and Entertainment Business. Our studio engineer today, again, is the one and the only, new haircut, new glasses, Dan Stewart. So we're glad to have you guys listening in. You know, several years ago, this all began. It was actually a project. Those of us who fill the pulpits week in and week out, year in and year out, when we get to moments like Christmas or Easter, it always is a challenge in preaching because you're not sure what you can add to the story that people don't already know. And preaching four Sundays of Advent, same church for 16 or 17 years in a row, you sort of run out of new Christmas sermons. And so I started writing original Christmas stories. And I began to write some of them that were period pieces set back in the first century world. And then I began to write some of them that were modern day stories of Christmas. And so what I want to share with you today to get you in the Christmas spirit is one of those original stories that I wrote several years ago. And this one is a period piece. It is set in the days of the birth of Christ in the city of Bethlehem. And it's a story that I have entitled Sneaky Grace. All these stories, by the way, can be found, if you would want to do so, in my book. My book is entitled Christmas Then and Now. It's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and also from the publisher, which is NurturingFaith.com. So anyway, go out and buy a book and make me filthy rich. But anyway, here is a story that I have entitled Sneaky Grace. His hands were old and gnarled, just like the pieces of knotty pine that had helped to make them that way. For a lifetime, Samuel had been a carpenter, like his father and like his grandfather before him. Shaping and carving wood was all that he had ever known. It was all that he ever wanted to do. It was his passion, and at times it was his obsession. His earliest memories were bound to his father's woodworking shop. As a young boy, it was his job to sweep the sawdust and the wood shavings out from under his father's feet. He learned early how to use a saw, how to sand, how to carve, how to shape into form. By the time he was a teenager, he had already become one of the better carpenters in the whole village. Through the years, his skills sharpened, as did his fame. His work was sought out by some of the finest families in town. They would come to his shop and they would describe a piece that they desired, and he would take their dream and turn it into reality. Maybe a chair, maybe a table, maybe a cabinet. Whatever was needed, Samuel could make it. It seemed that he could do it all. He was a master carpenter whose skills were second to none. Once, the local rabbi commissioned him to carve new wooden spindles to hold the sacred scrolls of the prophets, which of course were read in the tabernacle every Sabbath day. Such spindles are called in the Hebrew language Azihayin, which means the tree of life. He labored for months over every intricate detail. The wood was polished to the point that it looked like marble. Carefully he carved symbols of faith into each piece, Star of David, a shepherd's staff, a sacrificial lamb. When the final product was presented, his heart was filled with pride. Each week as the scrolls were unfurled, he felt a sense of justifiable accomplishment. He worked with all kinds of woods, though, and cedar was his favorite. It was soft and easy to carve. Wood from the olive trees was by far the most durable, yet many saws had he dulled on its rough texture. He made furniture, he made wall hangings, small carvings of various figures within the Old Testament stories, and on each piece he would leave his mark. He took a branding iron, heated it in the fire until it was red hot. He would then sear his unique mark into the wood. As a master carpenter, the brand carried weight. Any piece that bore that mark was valuable, well made by one of the best. But that was a long time ago. Time had not been a friend to his craft. He had not aged well. His hair had turned gray, his eyes had become weak, carried a little weight around the middle. His back always hurt. It was hard to stand without having his knees screaming for relief. In fact, over the years, his hands had begun to lose their skill. They were no longer steady as they had once been. They were now stiff, and the joints ached each time he gripped a hammer or attempted to hold a chisel. The demands for his work were all but gone. His time was spent mostly on repair jobs, usually fixing pieces made by other more skilled carpenters. Sometimes they needed a repair job, and he was the man they called. He made stools and simple chairs, but any young apprentice could make the things that he now made. The masterpieces were just ordinary things, nothing of real value, nothing held in much demand by anyone. In fact, it had been years since he placed his special mark on anything that he made. About a year or so ago, a woman had stopped in the shop. Her mother had given her a beautiful table and chairs that he had once made. She needed another chair. "Can you make one to match the others?" she inquired. He offered his great assurance, but in his mind he had his doubts. He worked on the chair for nearly 3 months. He cut and he carved and he shaped. His hands ached and his back screamed for relief, but over time and with great effort, the task was finally complete. He turned it over and burned that mark onto the bottom of the seat. He loaded it on his back and began the journey across town to where the affluent people lived. He found the address and he knocked at the back door. She led him inside and led him to the place where it was to sit. He unwrapped it carefully and sat it next to the others. She took one look and said, "I'm sorry, it's not even close. I don't think we can use it." He couldn't even muster up any anger, for he knew that she was right. It looked horrible in comparison. He tipped his hat and loaded it back onto his back and began the long walk back home. It was twilight by the time he got to the shop. He set it in the middle of the floor. He thought of all the toil and all the effort that he had spent all the weeks working the wood. He picked up a small hatchet, smashed the chair into 1,000 pieces. He spent the night watching each piece slowly burn in the fire. It was as though his very life going up in smoke. As the months progressed, his skills continued to diminish. He found himself slipping into a deep and dark depression. All that had once been his joy and passion was now a part of what pained him the most. He spent his days playing the part of a beggar. He was soon known and recognized by the people of Bethlehem for that role. Former friends would go out of their way to avoid him. During the day, he would go from one shop to another, from stranger to stranger, always saying the same phrase, "I'm just an old carpenter. Could you help me out a little?" And each day, he would collect a little, a coin here, a few coins there. Not enough to live on, but enough to buy some sweet wine at a local tavern where he would drink away the pain of being too old and too useless and too unimportant. Every night, he would make his way to the tavern. He would sit in a corner, always alone, having conversations with himself. Sometimes the dialogue would be heated and angry, and sometimes he would quietly cry. Sometimes he would curse his hands, which had once given him such status but now betrayed him over and over again. Each night he would quickly spend all of the day's collection. At closing time, the owner, who treated him with patience, would help him to the door, would always wish him well as he walked away. "Shalom, Samuel," he would say. Samuel learned how to survive. He would stumble his way down the narrow streets looking for a place to bed down for the night. Sometimes he found a quiet corner between a couple of buildings. Sometimes it was a doorway that gave him shelter. Sometimes it was the soft ground beneath a shade tree. But this night he lucked out. He wandered around the back of an old inn where he discovered a stable. A young boy was pitching fresh straw among the animals. "Don't mind me, boy. I'm just an old carpenter looking for a place to sleep it off," he said. Then he found a quiet corner with plenty of soft hay, and within moments he went into a deep sleep. He remembered stirring for a moment during the wee hours of the night. That same boy was moving among the stalls, gathering up clean straw for some reason. He dismissed it, went back to sleep. But several hours later, he awakened with a jolt. Though he had consumed enough to keep him groggy for hours, he found himself very much awake with the realization that a number of people were now crowded into the stable. He heard excited voices and shouts of praise. Hidden in the shadows, he moved a bit closer. He could see the source of the excitement in the conversation. Though it was still well before sunrise, he could make out the features of at least 10 people in the stable. "Who, what, and why?" he thought. He saw the young stable boy again, but there were others. They had the smell of shepherds. Some were still holding their staffs, but most were kneeling as though they were praying. One very excited young man was telling the story of all that he had seen and heard. He talked of angels in the night sky and of a heavenly chorus singing praises to God. The angels had said, "For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord." He moved closer. He saw the object of the excitement. A young mother was holding a newborn child. The father stood by. The mother's face was glowing like that of any new mother holding her child for the first time. She was excited to hear the words of the shepherds. She, too, had heard from angels concerning the birth of her son. She spoke of how the angel Gabriel himself had appeared to her, announcing that she would bear the very Son of God. The shepherds hugged and wept and prayed and rejoiced. They seemed almost giddy with excitement. One of the younger shepherd boys even said, "What are you going to name him?" The father of the baby said, "God told us to name him Jesus, meaning he will be the one to save people from their sins." It had been a long time since Samuel had been in the synagogue on the Sabbath. He had drifted away from God in the midst of his frustration and anger. Yet suddenly the words of the prophet came to his mind, words taken from that scroll of Isaiah, which had been rolled on the spindles he had once made. The words of the coming Messiah raced across his mind with such clarity that he could almost see them. "For a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace." Could it be? Could the salvation of the world really have come? Could this tiny child born among the animals and the common people of the day, could this be the Son of the living God? Earlier, the father had mentioned that they were traveling because of the census. They were from Nazareth, of the house and lineage of David. And so, in his mind at least, it all began to fit. The angel's proclamation, the evidence of Scripture, the promises of God's coming Messiah. But was it really happening in this place, on this night, in the presence of these common people? The baby drifted off to sleep again. The mother carefully wrapped him in a blanket and placed him in the animal's manger. It had been stuffed full of soft hay and seemed to make a wonderful crib for the newborn infant. After several moments of praise and bowing before the manger, the shepherds quietly left the stable not to awaken the child. And soon the mother drifted off to sleep, completely exhausted but completely filled with joy. The father Joseph placed his coat around her and sat nearby until exhaustion finally caught up with him as well. It was already mid-morning by the time Samuel awoke. It took just a moment for him to get his bearings. As he was wiping the sleep from his eyes, he suddenly remembered all that his eyes had seen the night before. The young family was packing up their belongings. Their donkey was being loaded with their meager possessions, a few blankets, a cloth bag into which the mother had put some bread and cheese. The baby was sleeping soundly in the manger. When everything was packed, she took him into her arms and they walked out into the bright morning sun. As she passed by the manger, the fringe of her shawl caught momentarily on the corner of the manger. And without her knowledge, the small manger overturned and landed quietly in the soft hay. Only after they were out of sight did Samuel move from his seclusion. He walked over to the manger and quietly set it on its feet again. But something caught his eye. It was a carpenter's mark, seared on the bottom of the manger. It was the distinct mark that he had once seared into every piece he made. Could it be? Was this the product of his hands? The mark was undeniable. Somewhere long ago, he had fashioned this very manger, maybe as a young apprentice in his father's shop. And suddenly he realized that his skill had not been wasted, but used of God. Of all the masterpieces created in his life of carving and cutting, maybe this had become his greatest work. The simple manger had become a crib for a newborn king. The Son of God had rested in a manger made by his own hands. He stood lost in his thoughts for a long time. Finally, he was interrupted by a young woman's voice. He turned to discover it was the young mother with her child. "Are you the innkeeper?" she asked. "I wanted to say thank you." "No, I'm not the innkeeper. You see, I'm just an old carpenter. I'm a master carpenter. I have even made a bed for a king." "You must be gifted by God," she said. "I hope someday I can see your fine work." And she turned and walked away. But he would never be the same again. He noticed the sun seemed a bit brighter, the air more alive. The beauty of God's world was a bit more brilliant. He walked to the synagogue, a place he hadn't been in a long time. It was not the Sabbath, and only a few people were even around, but he knelt down to offer his thanks to God, knowing how much his outlook had changed just from seeing the child of Mary and Joseph and the hope that his coming had promised. A young Levite student was reading aloud from a scroll, the spindles of which had been beautifully carved. He read from Isaiah, "The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. Those who live in a dark land, the light will shine on them." You know, sometimes the grace of God sneaks up on us. Just when we feel forgotten, alone, depressed, and discouraged, the light of God's love reaches to lift us to life again. On our darkest days, when hope is gone and joy is drained away, still the angel's proclamation is meant for us. "Behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior who is Christ the Lord." So let's face it. We do live in a dark land. There is injustice, there is evil, there is hatred and prejudice. There is greed and envy and jealousy. The darkness seems to close in around us, and sometimes we wonder, where's the hope? Where's the answer? Look to the manger again and remember who the child in the hay turned out to be. John's gospel describes it this way. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness." This Christmas, I hope you'll allow God's grace to sneak up on you. I don't know all the circumstances of your life story this year. Maybe this has been a difficult time. Maybe you lost a loved one. Maybe you lost your job. Maybe you lost your marriage. Perhaps your self-esteem has taken quite a beating. Maybe you've been lost in the darkness of sin and failure. The point of Christmas, though, is that you do not have to stumble around in the dark any longer. Even now, God's grace is reaching out to your life, to your heart. He has not abandoned you, nor has he given up on you. You are his child. You are of great worth. He sent his son to earth just to remind you how much he loves you. So stand in wonder and stand in awe. It is God's sneaky grace that fills your heart this season. As always, thanks for downloading and listening to our podcast. We'll see you again soon with Moments That Matter.